It is okay to be ambitious, to want a bigger life, to love your career and to love what you do and to follow careers and ideas that, may not be necessarily recommended for women.
Welcome to Jump Podcast. I'm your host, Traveling Jackie, and I'm here to explore travel, adventure, and lifestyle in ways meant to motivate you to move and experience the world outside your comfort zone and to do big, courageous things with your one life. Let this show be a source of advice and inspiration, and remember that in the end, it's you who takes the leap. This episode is supported by Osprey, my go-to luggage brand for everything since 2015, and by EcoChile, a one-stop shop for planning custom trips to Chile and Argentina. So stay tuned for more from them. And of course, we're supported by Jump Adventures and our own collection of epic adventure itineraries to Patagonia and beyond. Let us send you on your dream adventure. You can find out more and browse trips at jumpadventures.com. Okay. Hello, my friends. Thank you for being here. I have here with me today someone I've known for a long time. I actually met her at a travel conference in Greece back in 2014, and she became my editor when I very briefly freelanced for Yahoo Travel. But even though our time working together was brief in the overall picture so far, she has really actually made a really big impact on my life. So maybe we can talk a little bit more about that as we reconnect here. But allow me to introduce Joe Piazza, who, while once upon a time was a bigwig editor and travel writer for many prestigious publications, she's gone on to become, among many other things, a best-selling author of lots of books, both fiction and nonfiction. And one of them, which recently just came out, is the inspiration behind the hat that I'm wearing today. So in case you're watching.
I left all my berets at home in Philadelphia.
Oh,
and
no.
Now we're in the Catskills. Okay. So I did try to steal a tiara from my girls, but they weren't having it. They're like, no, we're very busy with this tiara. So
yeah. Well, that would have been appropriate. But yeah, we'll get more into why I'm wearing this hat today. So I'm really excited to get into kind of the behind the scenes of your recent book. And I just have to say it's been too long, my friend. It is so good to see you and have a in-person conversation again. So welcome to the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time I see you on my Instagram, I think about bison because I came out there and you and I went to a hotel that was also a bison farm, and we were up close and personal with these crazy bison. It was both magical and terrifying.
Yeah, this is Montana. That's a really good nutshell of how to describe Montana, actually. Magical and terrifying. The wildlife is real here.
The wildlife was real. Yes.
That exactly. Was, though, like 11 years ago, I think.
It had to be 11 years ago. I know, it had to be 12 years ago because I've been married for 11 years.
Yeah. It's been really cool, though, to follow your story because, gosh. There's so many different aspects of it that I want to talk about, but the thing I want to get to eventually, which we aren't going to start here, but is these books that you're writing now that are kind of like the escape books. Like, you write these books that take you away, and I've always been obsessed with books like this, that they take place in a place like far away, and you just go there and you're traveling there as you're in this book. It's like escapism or something. So I want to get to that eventually because I have so much that like I've thought about as I read this book, and I'm still learning from you as I'm reading, and I just have some questions for you. But at the same time, I think we should back up a little bit because, as we mentioned, we met like 12 years ago. I don't know. And I remember you saying back when we were working together at Yahoo, or whatever, however you want to say that, is that because you were traveling a lot at that time, all over the world, you're getting all these opportunities to go and like talk about places. And I got to do that a little bit at that time because of you. But I remember you saying, I need to get this all in before I become a soccer mom. And that was before you had met Nick. Like, it was before, before everything. And I remember thinking that, like, whoa, really? Like, is that really what you want to do? But you were so like, this is going to be my life. Like, I'm going to do all this travel right now because one of these days I'm going to be a soccer mom. And then it happened. And also the way that you met your husband is like this crazy magical story. And so now you're a soccer mom. And you also have this incredible career as an author. And it's so neat. So congrats on everything, first of all.
Well, you met me. I was 34, I think. And like, I was at this place in my life where I'm like, I'm done. I'm like, I've done all the things. I've traveled around the world. I'm ready to settle down. I want to get married. I'd been the bridesmaid in all of my friends' weddings. I was so over being the maid of honor. I was like, you don't want me. And they're like, you're the most fun. And I'm like, I don't want to be the most fun anymore. And then I did. I met my husband, Nick, on a boat in the Galapagos. We were both on assignment for Yahoo. And we met on the boat. It was a 10-day eco cruise with Eco Ventura. Highly recommend, guys. We love Eco Ventura. And on the last day at sea, we smooched. And then we went on a date about 3 weeks later. We went camping in Joshua Tree because I was flying out for a conference in Palm Springs. And we got engaged 3 months later and married 9 months later. Yeah. I will say, I'm actually not a soccer mom, though. We have three kids. So there's three of them, which is a lot of children. It's more than expected. They're 9, 6, and 3. But I do everything I can to keep them out of organized sports so that I can still travel, honestly, on weekends. I do. Huh. I do. Because all of my friends whose kids, organized sports have gotten so bananas, y'all. It's like they're on the road every weekend day. And I'm like, this is the worst. So we're trying to avoid that. And it turns out my kids are actually really good little travelers. So we hit the road with them pretty often, which is really great.
So you're taking your family with you when you're doing like book tours and stuff?
A lot of the time, yeah. I mean, with book tours, it's usually half and half because they get bored. So they were on it for a little bit with me this summer for the Parisian heist. And they came with me for my entire, we went to Italy for a month when I was working on my novel, The Sicilian Inheritance. And they came with me for that. I was also making a true crime podcast there because Sicilian Inheritance is loosely based on a murder in my own family that I decided to solve for a true crime podcast, also called The Sicilian Inheritance. And so they were with me while I'm like solving this 100-year-old murder in Sicily. And then we just got back from Wyoming because the book that I'm writing that comes out next summer is set at a very fancy dude ranch in Wyoming in the Big
Horn. This I love. Yeah, because this is my neck of the woods.
You're going to go bananas for this one. And so they were with me. They were with me for all of that dude ranch murder research, which, you know, it was actually great. It was great. And they're fun to travel with. My nine-year-old boys are especially fun to travel with. I'll tell you that, because like the two of you have reached a point where you can both read your own books and ignore each other and then like make snarky jokes about things. And then go back to reading your own books and ignoring each other. It's like traveling with one of my girlfriends.
How many books have you published? Let's start with just like some 14. Basic things. And then 14.
Yeah.
This was number 14.
Parisian Heist, which just came out about a month ago, was number 14.
I was on your pre-order. It arrived on my doorstep the day that it launched. And I was very excited about this. Let's just go ahead and talk about the book because there's so, well, we don't have to talk about like the book, like spoilers. It's
let's not do spoilers. No, let's talk. I love what you said earlier about books as an escape, right?
Because that too, yeah.
I try to write all of my books as like a way for the reader to travel to this place. I want the place to be another character in the story. And, you know, in Sicilian Inheritance, obviously that was Sicily. In Parisian Heist, it's very much Paris and also some Amsterdam. And I knew I wanted to write this story and I wanted to start the writing of it in Paris. And so I flew out there for about 10 days for my friend Glynis's 50th birthday and kicked off the writing. And then I finished it up in Paris as well and like double checked all of the places and the little alleys and the restaurants. And I ate all the food and like 19 desserts just so I could decide which 5 to include in the book.
Yep.
And
it's all for research.
So much of my research has to do with food. I want everyone to read this and get hungry and then make themselves a chocolate mousse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't done that yet, but I certainly am so intrigued by the sense of place and the research. Actually, I will say at the end of the book, there's something that stood out to me almost more than the story itself was the author's note at the end, which this is not, there's zero spoilers here. It's just about how you got the idea for the book, which was just like a random kind of conversation. Something sparked your interest. But the amount of research and this, everything that you cited and everything that you read, because so, okay, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I love reading Dan Brown books because they are
great.
He's amazing. His level of research is like beyond what I can even comprehend. I always learn stuff when I read his books, and they always transplant you. Like they're taking you to somewhere, and just that's, and your book, your style of research and the things that you brought to life reminded me of Dan Brown, which in my book is like, that's massive. Like, congratulations. It was huge.
Are you kidding? I want to sell millions of copies of The Parisian Heist. Yes, please. Please. I want all of Dan Brown.
Yeah, let's do that.
So yeah, that's great. Let's do that, guys. Buy millions of copies of this book.
Yeah. Everybody go buy The Parisian Heist right now by Joe Piazza. Yeah. And it's gorgeous in hardcover.
It is gorgeous in hardcover. But yeah, that's the goal. Because I'm a journalist, right? I've been a journalist my whole life, my whole adult life. And so the research was really important. And also historical fiction readers will call you out if you get anything wrong. So you mentioned where I got the idea for this book. People ask me where I got my ideas all the time. And I'm like, they're literally everywhere. Like, I have to stop them from coming. My husband's like, there's so many ideas all of the time. But this one actually came from my friend Steven Weinberg. I'm here up in the Catskills right now, and his children are outside with my children on a very, very ill-advised slip and slide that I just bought. And he's an artist. He's a beautiful artist and an author. And he was working on this children's book called What is Color? And it's the history and science of color. And it's just so absolutely brilliant. And in one section on blues, he was talking about how do we know this particular shade of blue that Vincent van Gogh painted with, and what made Vincent van Gogh's paintings famous. And he came across the story of Joe van Gogh, who was Vincent's sister-in-law, who inherited hundreds of his paintings. They were essentially worthless after he passed away. And she made it his life's work to make him the most famous artist in the entire world. And she obviously succeeded. Like, sunflowers are on everything from cat collars to boxer shorts. And, you know, you will likely see something Van Gogh coded every single day of your life. And now that I've pointed that out, you'll notice it. Trust me. Like, yeah. I get texts from people all the time because I've been saying it in book events for Parisian. And so, yeah, Parisian Heist started with the story of Joe van Gogh, this untold story of this woman behind this man and how she accomplished this. And then I layered on an art heist set in modern day Paris, just because I love a good heist. And I really wanted to write an all woman heist. And then I connect the two timelines together through a missing Vincent van Gogh painting. And my research, I went to the Van Gogh Museum and the Van Gogh Library, and I got access to Joe's diaries, some of which were written in English because she was practicing English at the time. I've read through every letter that still exists that she wrote to her husband, Theo, every letter that Theo and Vincent wrote to each other. And I spent a lot of time with art historians, with curators, with artists themselves as they were painting to understand their process and, you know, how they really took in art and how art became a part of them. And then I have a heist expert, Anthony Amore, who's the director of security at the Isabella Gardner Museum, essentially taught me how to plan a heist. I now truly believe middle-aged women would be the best heisters on the planet. And I say this at every event, and I will tell, like, I cannot tell you the number of women in their like 50s and 60s who would like raise their hand and they're like, I am in, and they are not kidding.
Oh my gosh. You're going to start a whole different kind of movement here that you didn't
look
see coming.
We don't know what the future holds. Like, the economy is very precarious. Maybe I'm about to start a middle-aged lady gang.
Maybe you are. And maybe that's going to be an amazing thing. Because it seems like everything else that you're doing in the name of women really has been really powerful and really inclusive. So yeah, I mean, even just taking Jo Van Gogh and celebrating her and what you said about her in the author's note, just, you know, wanting everybody to understand her name should be bigger than Vincent's. Like, he wouldn't have a name if it weren't for her. He was dead. Like, he painted and that was the end of it.
Yeah. Well, and I truly believe that his paintings would have been lost. I mean, she inherited all of them. No one was buying them at the time. And her parents, her family, they were even like, just come back to the Netherlands, you know, just burn the canvases, sell the frames, because the frames were worth more than the paintings themselves, right? Sell the frames, sell like all of the wood that it's mounted on. And she said no. She believed in him the way that Theo, his brother, her husband, had believed in him. Theo had been his art dealer. Although I do like to point out, because most people have heard Theo van Gogh's name, they're like, oh, it's Vincent's brother. There have been movies and books about Theo. I would like to point out he was not a very good art dealer. Okay. He only sold one of Vincent's paintings, while Joe sold pretty much all of them. So let's give credit where credit is due. And she really succeeded. She succeeded in this world of art dealing, where women were not working or really inhabiting this world at all, during a time when women were certainly not respected in society, certainly not professional society. She did a lot to fight for the suffragist movement in the Netherlands as well, which was another really fascinating part of her life. And she's such a great role model because she wanted a bigger life. She wanted her life to have meaning and she wanted it to have a purpose. And she found and fought for that purpose at the same time as being a great mom. And I love that part of her because she truly was. When her husband died, she had a one-year-old little boy who they named after Vincent van Gogh, named Vincent. And she's a great mom. She's a really present mom. She like took on jobs where she could be with him and spend time with him and really nurture him and raise him the way that she wanted to, while also having careers of her own, and during a time when that was not the case for the majority of women. And so I like to point that out because I get asked by young women all the time, how can I say, can I still have kids and have a creative life? Can I still have kids and have a thriving career? Or much like what you said, I said to you, which I don't even remember saying that I want to have kids and then like travel all over the world and be a soccer mom. I don't think your life ends when you have kids at all. I mean, I think that we get to choose how we want to be a parent in the world. And I'm a parent who wants to be with my kids a lot and then also wants other people to take my kids a lot and, you know, show them how to be humans in the world. I want to travel with my kids and I want to travel solo and I want a very big, meaningful career, you know, that has an impact on the world while also raising three really good human beings. And like, I think that we get to create that if that's what we want. That can be our reality.
We'll come right back to that. But first, let's thank the brands that support our show. Calling all campers or outdoor hanger-outers, even music in the park or backyard kind of people, Osprey has a new limited edition collab that you need to know about. They've teamed up with OXO, Hydro Flask, and Helinox, combining all of their expertise to create a whole line of essential camping products called CampCore. From bags, packs, coolers, organization cubes and totes, to camp furniture like collapsible tables and chairs, to cookware like pots, pans, utensils, mugs, and even a very handy coffee grinder and brewing kit, which I gotta say, brews a nice cup of decaf for that afternoon sup sesh at the lake. You know, if you're someone who enjoys coffee in the afternoon, like me. I could brew my coffee, sit in my chair, drink out of my mug, and set it in the attachable cup holder using only CampCore products. I've also got to say, I'm super impressed with the quality of these products. Imagine the best of each of these brands just combined together. So for example, take Osprey's trusty Blue Sign approved, remember, that means Osprey cares about the environment, nano-tough rugged material that we already know we love from our favorite transporter duffels, but this time, put it on a camp table, or chair, or carrying case, or backpack cooler. It's the best of all of these brands in one product line, all backed by Osprey's almighty guarantee. It's CampCore, and it's here for a limited time only. So go check out osprey.com to get everything you need for your travels and your casual outdoor hangs. Are you interested in traveling to Patagonia or anywhere else in Chile or Argentina? Of course you are. I have good news, not so good news, and great news for you. The not so good news is that it's often logistically super challenging to plan trips to certain destinations in Chile and Argentina because of advanced permitting, limited capacity, vast distances between locations, border crossings, and a myriad of other bureaucratic issues. The good news is that my friends over at ecochile.travel and ecoargentina.travel can handle all of these logistics for you and help you plan the trip of your dreams. They are local, they know the systems, they speak the language, they also speak English, and building custom trips is what they do. I've traveled with EcoChile before. I actually went to Easter Island through them on my last trip to Chile, and I was mind blown at how well I was treated as a traveler. The amount of support and materials they provided me made me feel like I was in such good hands. And for me, being the one who usually does all the planning, oh my goodness, it feels so good to be taken care of, like to the last little detail, especially because I had not been to Easter Island before. I trusted their expertise and my experience was even better than I imagined. Whether you know exactly what you want to experience in a destination or you don't, EcoChile will work with your interests, travel style, budget, time frame, and take care of every piece of your itinerary that you want them to handle. Think nature, hiking, wildlife, boutique lodges, road trips, local culture, and real connection with the destination, all while having reliable logistics and support throughout your entire trip. That's what EcoChile provides. And the great news is that when you go to ecochile.travel or ecoargentina.travel to book with them, you can receive 5% off your trip. Just select Traveling Jackie in the inquiry form or mention me in your email, phone, or WhatsApp message. Go to ecochile.travel and start your dream trip planning today. Don't forget to tell them Traveling Jackie sent you. And thank you, wherever you are, for listening to the show and supporting these brands that help make it possible.
I totally agree with you. I completely agree with you. And I love that. Well said, all of that, because it is true. It all comes down to choice. And honestly, it's you. It's your personal choice. This is what you're building for your life because this is what you want. And so I think instead of asking you the question, they should just ask themselves, you know, women should just have the confidence to say, this is what I want. And this is what I want. You can have both. You can do it all and you can do it with help and you can do it well. And you can be successful.
And I think that the trick is really just to choose the right partner. I misquote Catelyn Moran, the British writer, a lot, because she said, when I was interviewing her about this, that the person you marry is your glass ceiling. And I truly believe that. So I think it's choosing what kind of life you want and then telling that potential partner what you want. And if that's not what they want, maybe they're not the partner. Because I have found that, and I see this in a lot of my friends' marriages now that I'm 46, people rarely change. Like the person that they tell you they are, they truly are. And I mean, I met my husband while we were traveling the world. And, you know, obviously, like every couple has ups and downs, but he's also wildly supportive of my career, of our family. We have this equal partnership that we work on all the time. But you know, we both knew what we were getting into when we started doing this.
Was he in Paris with you any of the times to research this book?
Yeah. He was in Paris with me. He was also not the whole time because I really wanted to be by myself. But then also I wanted to be by myself. And then I told the other moms at school that I was going. So then they came, which was great because they were like literally at Bon Marché the whole time. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in Auvers. I'm in the Louvre. And they're like, we're buying cashmere scarves. And I'm like, I love that for you.
Good. Yeah. Meanwhile, you're getting your stuff done.
Yeah. But Nick also came with me to Amsterdam and to Bussum, where Joe is from, and, you know, came with me to the Van Gogh Museum and the Van Gogh Library and also the Rijksmuseum. And he's also my first reader. He's my first reader. And then I have two really great girlfriends who are also my first readers. And so, yeah, he really weighed in on a lot of this book.
Amazing. I love that so much. All my brain over here as I'm sighing and breathing heavily is just thinking, this is like goals for me. I love this. It's inspiring, you know,
which I love because I don't think that we necessarily like see enough role models of like really highly successful working women who are very happy. Like I talk to a lot of younger women when I'm on a book tour and they're like, your generation seems so pissed off all the time. And I'm like, well, we are. There's a lot to be pissed off about. But also I love my life 97% of the time. And I'm here because of like so many feminist values or simply values that, you know, mean that women should have equality and equity, even if you don't like the word feminist. And so I'm like, I want to shout about that from the rooftops. I'm like, I love my freaking life. And I love this life that I've been able to build because women have freedom.
Yeah, I love that. I really do. And okay, so you said your next one is coming out about Wyoming, about a dude ranch in Wyoming. And I also want to shout out to your other, another one that just recently came out. I have not read it yet, but Everyone Is Lying to You. And then the Sicilian Inheritance, I also read. That was like my last summer book, you know. Was it just last summer that one came out?
Sicilian was two summers ago.
Two summers
ago.
Everyone
Is Lying to You was last summer. And then Parisian Heist this summer, yeah.
Do you have an idea of which one of your books might become the first movie? Because I could see this Parisian heist as a movie. Like, I want to see it as a movie because it's exciting and there's a lot of big scenes and like big, I don't know, ideas in it. And I think that it's, and I also, it would really help because there's so much education in it around art that like, I need to like see it all, you know, you, as you're describing the colors and the frames and like the rooms and everything's so real, you know, like they could make that into a movie.
And they should make it into a movie.
They should.
We're talking to producers for Parisian Heist right now. Sicilian Inheritance is in development with MGM and we are figuring out whether or not Everyone Is Lying To You is going to be a TV show or movie.
Whoa, holy crap, Joe.
Yeah, but you know, Hollywood is such a crapshoot. Like you never, everything I've ever written besides If Nuns Ruled the World has been in discussion for or various stages of development for TV shows and nothing has actually gone into production yet. So I'm like, we'll see. It's all yeah. like, yay, cross your fingers, knock on things and don't quit your day job.
Right. And keep going. But this is the work that you get to do that you love. And I am obsessed with that because now you have created well, you also have a podcast. You also have your podcast. But is the podcast and then the writing, that is that all you have right now? For I mean, that's a lot. It's a lot because you've also got your family. But like
my husband and I run a media company called Influential Media. And so the podcast is run through that. All of my writing projects are run through that. And then also some like digital consulting projects and branding projects.
Okay. Wow. Just ever busy. I've never, ever known you to not be like 100 miles an hour. So this tracks still. but as a person who's now writing a book that takes place in a place, right? My own story. It's fascinating to me though, because they're fiction. The ones that I've read, you know, they're fiction. And so you're creating this whole story. You're creating all of this backstory. And you know, the difference, like when you read as a reader versus when you read as a writer.
Oh yeah, of course. Of course. I actually, you know, it's really hard. Like I love reading and I think it's so important in my career as a writer to be reading constantly, but it is often work. Like it's not as relaxing as I think it is for people who don't write for a living because you're constantly thinking about what you're working on and like, how can I make this better? Or, oh wow, like this isn't very good. And I think you read in a very different way.
True. But I also think that you can gain lessons, you can gain things from books that are completely outside of your genre too. You know, it's like there's all sorts of things to be gleaned. And even I was like taking notes. I would have to stop reading your book to go write something in mine, like which is really neat because they're really different. Like mine's memoir and yours is a novel. But man, the amount that you've come up with, like the backstory and everything, it's like encouraging me to be like, okay, I do need to tell that part, you know, or whatever, because it's just like, it's so full, it's so complete. And it's amazing to me that you can make that up for somebody like Claire, who, you know, is a fictional character.
Is
in
a
the
completely
book.
Fictional character. Yeah. It's true. It's true. No, I think, I mean, I learned so much from different genres. Like I'm reading a book about how owls' brains work right now. And that's actually really helping me plan a murder for hire plot in Wyoming. So, you know, you never know what you're going to take from reading something.
Yeah. Yeah. What is a message that you want people to know, like when you through maybe not all of your books. Let's try one at a time. Like, what about with the Parisian heist? Like, what's the thing that you want people to take away?
Oh, my gosh. That women would be much better art heisters. No. Honestly, well, so there's a few themes that I think people can take away from all of my books, right? And so, like, one of the themes that's woven through all of them is the theme of female friendship. I never have knights in shining armor rescuing anyone. I mean, I love men. Like I said, I love my husband. I'm raising a boy child. And they're both great men. And I'm surrounded by good men. A good man inspired this book, Steven Weinberg, author of What is Color? But at the same time, it's the women who save each other and they save themselves. And I think that that's the reality for most women. And so I like that to be at the forefront of a lot of books, as well as, you know, the strength of female bonds and female friendships. And then also to bring women's ambition to the forefront, to talk about how it is okay to be ambitious, to want a bigger life, to, you know, to love your career and to love what you do and to follow careers and ideas that, you know, may not be necessarily recommended for women. And then I also, from Parisian Heist, I do want to eradicate the mythology of the singular male genius. There's always been someone behind these men lifting them up. There've always been caregivers, sisters, mothers, wives. And I think that we need to acknowledge that unpaid, unacknowledged labor.
Brilliant. Yeah. Which have you, okay, because I'm thinking about the Sicilian inheritance as you're also saying these words and thinking about the story that existed in that one as well. And I know that I feel like maybe we should go a little bit into that book because you just dropped like a really cool thing about that book, like, I don't know, 10 minutes ago, that was actually from within your own family. Yeah. And so can you give us a quick rundown about what that book is about? And I'm just going to say, because we're not doing any spoilers and she's not going to give you the endings, but both of these books had me like, I didn't see the thing coming. Which I love.
Good. I love it when you don't see the thing coming. That brings me
like
so
you
much
think
joy.
You do and then you don't.
No. So yeah, Sicilian Inheritance is loosely based on my own great grandmother's murder in 1916 in Sicily. Her husband and her sons came here to America to try to make money for the family. And they were here for a long time, for about 10 years, and she was murdered before she could join them. And that was like family lore. Like most of my family members didn't know. They knew it had happened, but the focus was always on the men. It was like, and the men came here to build a bigger and better life. And she was killed back in Sicily and never made it. And like most people didn't even know her name. And I was fascinated by this and also fascinated by Sicily, to tell you the truth. Like it's such a wild and wonderful part of Europe that is unlike any other place in Europe. And I've been there a bunch of times for work and also with my family. And so I knew that I wanted to set a novel there at some point. And so I started digging into the time period that my grandmother Lorenza was allegedly murdered. And what I discovered is that when about a million men left southern Italy and Sicily to come to the United States, when the women were left behind, they took their jobs. They took their jobs. They learned to read and write for the first time. And they really kind of had agency over their lives for the first time. It was this like, not called a feminist moment, but a feminist moment in Sicilian history. And I kept thinking, like, what would that be like? What would that be like to have this freedom and that agency for the first time in your life? And then to have your husband call like 10 years later and be like, it's time to come to Scranton and go back to the kitchen. And you're like, I don't want to go to Scranton. And like, what kinds of dangers might that put you in? And might all of that freedom put you in? And so that was as much as the book was based on my actual great-grandmother's story. But from there, I did develop this character of Serafina, whose husband does travel to America and she's left behind and she gets to fulfill her dreams and the career that she never knew that she wanted and also raise her children and have a fulfilling life and fulfilling relationships with other women. And it's really beautiful. And in the modern timeline, we have a Philadelphia butcher and chef whose restaurant has just gone under and she's trying to figure out what to do next. And she may have inherited some family land, but in order to get to it, she has to solve her own great-grandmother's murder. And that's Serafina. And the timelines are both linked there.
It's so cool how you make these mysteries. My brain doesn't work like that, but I love to read them. Like, I don't know. But they're historical fictions too, which I love because you can't help but learn so much about the period and the place. And I will say, I've only been to Sicily in your book. I've never actually been there.
It's such a Jackie place. It is such a Jackie place. Like you have to go.
Well, Italy.
I know. No, but Sicily's different. It's totally different. So like, it's way less touristy. The food, dare I say it, is even better. Like you've got to go.
Oh, I definitely need to. Sardinia, I have done. And I can understand why, like, that place is very different as well. And so it gives me an idea of, like, I get to an extent why they say it's so different and people feel so different there. And I appreciate that. It's like Italy, but on island time. Like, what?
Italy, but on island time.
Okay. Wow. Well, so first of all, The Sicilian Inheritance and Parisian Heist. If anybody wants to find you, where do they go to follow you? Where can they find you?
I am on the Instagram at Joe Piazza Author. I have a Substack called Over the Influence and a podcast called Under the Influence. So I'm all over the internets in all of the places. And I have all the book updates there. I've been on tour for The Parisian Heist for pretty much the past month, and I'm finally taking a little bit of a break, which is lovely. And but I'll be back at it in the fall. And I also, you know, I post a lot of travel content on my Substack on Over the Influence, and especially about what it is like to travel with kids, because I do think that seemed really daunting to me at first. And so, like, I just want to share whatever I've learned.
And it's also fair to note, because this episode will be, you know, evergreen. It's August of 2026 right now, but you have been publishing a book like once a year recently.
I'm on a once a year schedule. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. You're incredibly prolific. It's only going to get better too, I feel like, because the more, I feel like you're just going to, with all these ideas and the success that you're seeing, it's probably just going to keep rolling.
We'll see. Yeah.
People can pay attention to when they can come see you in a book tour too, because most of the people don't live in the woods like me. They live in places where, you know, you actually go visit.
Well, I mean, I travel all over the world, honestly. And so my book tour dates are always on my Instagram. They're always on my webpage, joepiazza.com. And I think Parisian Heist, we have, Forbes actually called it, our good friend Laura Begley Bloom, who worked with us at Yahoo, did a story for Forbes about how this is the book that everyone's taking to Paris this summer, which I love to hear it. So even if you're going to Paris or you're not going to Paris, I still think that Parisian Heist is the book for you.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, to your point, you can read this from your couch and go to Paris in your mind.
You can read this from your couch and go to Paris in your mind. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I've been there for the past, like, I don't know. It took me a couple of weeks to read. So I feel like I've just been in and out of Paris and a little bit of Amsterdam too, which I have been to both of those places. So I can picture things, not perfectly, but I can picture things. And yeah, but it'll take you. I mean, like I said, I've never been to Sicily, but your book took me there anyway.
But the fun thing is that I think we've also had a lot of girlfriends reading it together, like a lot of group chats, and who've like been sending each other Instagram reels from Paris for years. And it's finally gotten that Paris trip out of the group chat, which is very fun because they're like, all right, now it's the time. And they finally booked tickets.
Book club. Yeah. Love it. All right, Joe, I know you have a hard stop. So thank you so much for your time. And it was really great to see you. And
I'm so
glad I saw you, the best of luck. And hey, when you come back, Do a book club. Well, hey, maybe we'll do a book club. But do a book tour stop in Montana next time, because Wyoming, Dude Ranch.
Will you be in conversation with me for it?
Yes. Yeah. Let's do it.
Done.
Yay. Okay.
All right. Bye, my love.
Thanks so much.